Health and Human Services Budget Division will come to order. Having a few members be a little slow, probably due to the weather this morning. So we'll expect some more people to be arriving.
Senator Berglund, take up Senate File 2168.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd like to begin with a delete everything amendment.
Do we have that? Being passed out now?
Should have it.
You have it? Okay.
It's an A3 amendment.
Is this the first time you've officially heard this bill? So this is an author's amendment?
Yes.
Okay, so as an author's amendment, and we have a quorum?
This amendment incorporates everything that we've been discussing in the committees prior to the legislative session, and we just did it as a delete everything amendment to make it easier for you to read.
Okay, so in order to get the bill into the shape the author wishes, we'll take up the A3 amendment. All those in favor of the A3 amendment. It's in. Do we have a quorum? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. We will maybe start to hear a little bit more about the A3 amendment until we have a quorum. We need one more member. I'm scanning the audience. I don't see quite enough.
All right, Mr. Chairman.
Here we go. Here's one more member. Okay. So, all those in favor of the author's A3 amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails. We now have Senate File 2168 in front of us. Senator Berglund.
Then I'd like to amend the delete everything amendment with the A5 amendment. This deals with the mental health part of the bill, and I really believe it just explains what we were intending to do all along a little better, so members aren't so confused about what type of professional would be involved in providing this service.
Okay, and this is also an author's amendment. So, all those in favor of the A5 amendment, please signify by saying aye. Aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
Yeah.
Motion prevails.
And then, Mr. Chairman, I have an A6 amendment.
It's also being passed out.
A7 amendment and an A8 amendment. We might as well pass them all out together.
Okay. We just got a 5. We're looking for 6, 7, and 8, Senator Berglund. These are all going to be author's amendments as well.
Right.
think at least the members have the A6, the A7, and the A8 amendments. We'll take them each one at a time. They're each author's amendment. All those in favor of the A6 author's amendment?
Just a word of explanation, Mr. Chairman. This is an appropriations article, and it does reduce the cut to the county block grants, both the CSSA block grant and the mental health block grant. Together, the reduction is $9 million less in cuts than we had talked about earlier.
Okay. All those in favor
Chair.
Of the A6
Mr. Chair.
Amendment?
Aye. Mr. Chair?
Yes, Senator Fischbach.
And Mr. Chair, Senator Berkeland, I'm sorry to interrupt, but I just couldn't hear you quite because there was lots of rustling. So
I'm sorry. In the committee meetings that we had before the session, we talked about cutting the CSSA and adult mental health block grant by $29 million. This amendment reduces that cut by $9
million. Thank you.
You're welcome. So all those in favor of the author's amendment A6 signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. The A7 amendment.
This is a DHS technical amendment.
Okay, and it is also an author's amendment. All those in favor of the A7 amendment, aye?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. A8 amendment, Senator Berger.
Mr. Chairman, we were listening to people at the last hearing during the interim about trying to refine the hospital formula in the bill, and this amendment would do that, and it would be reflected in the new run that you have. This amendment would make that new run happen. And deletes two of the DRGs from the maternity rate increases. It limits the rate increase to hospitals in cities of the third or fourth class only to hospitals with fewer than 500 MA admissions and increases the rate increase to 27% instead of 17%. And it changes the GAMC hospital rates. They were 70% for hospitals with $1 million in GAMC business and 40% for other hospitals. The new rates are 69% and 60%. So the impact of this amendment is to soften the impact on small hospitals in cities of the third and fourth class.
Okay, and this is also an author's amendment. We'll adopt it and then take discussion and have the whole bill explained. So all those in favor of the A8 author's amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. Now, just to recap then, because I know people have been coming in, what we've done is we've adopted the delete everything A3 amendment you'll find in your package. We've adopted the amendments to the delete everything. We've adopted A5, A6, A7, and A8. And this package brings the bill in line with the author's wishes, how it should be presented, and it brings it in line with the new runs that you will also have in your packets. Is that correct, Senator Berglund?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so then on and the bill, Senator Berglund.
I'm just going to go through the bill again briefly. I know some of you were here for the hearings that we had during the interim, so I don't want to be too redundant. Section 1 of the bill provides for mental health, urgent care, and psychiatric consultations. Requires the commissioner to include mental health, urgent care, and psychiatric consultation as a part of but not limited to the redesign of the community-based hospitals and the Anoka RTC. These services must not duplicate existing services. It defines mental health, urgent care, and psychiatric consultation, provides for the rapid criteria for the rapid access to psychiatry, provides the criteria for the collaborative psychiatric consultation. It also allows the commissioner to phase in mental health urgent care services. The subdivision also requires the first phase of services to focus on Hennepin and Ramsey counties with data tracking requirements related to the association of impact on utilization of inpatient emergency room and other services. It requires the commissioner to maximize the use of available health care coverage for services that would be provided under the section, and it would be the commissioner's responsibility to provide services for individuals without health care coverage to not exceed the appropriation in the section. It allows the commissioner to select a structure and funding method that is the most effective for each county or group of counties, which may include grants, contracts, direct provision by state-operated services, and public-private partnerships. The next section of the bill, Section 2, deals with the Medicaid surcharge on hospitals. It temporarily increases by 1.56% hospital charges to 3.95% from March 1st, 2010 to September 30th, and 3.06% from October 1st, 2010 to June 30th of 2011. There is a general assistance medical care account established in the bill, and the deposit of this money would go into that account. Section 3 deals with the HMO surcharge. It temporarily increases the 0.6 health maintenance organization surcharge to 4% from March 1st of 2010 to June 30th and establishes a temporary 4% surcharge on county-based purchasing plans for the same period. This revenue is also deposited in the new GAMC account. Section 4 delays by 6 months the hospital rebasing schedule to begin phasing in on January 1st of 2011. Section 5 delays for 1 year until July 1st, 2011, the downward adjustment in an existing medical assistant inpatient hospital service ratable reduction to 1.79% from 1.9%. It also temporarily increases in MA inpatient hospital rates of 14% for hospitals in Hennepin and Ramsey County. And we have amended this so that it is a higher percentage for other hospitals, depending on the size of the hospital. Section 6 provides a temporary rate increase for private not-for-profit hospitals with a high rate of MA mental health admissions. Section 7 provides a temporary rate increase in the existing payment for hospitals located outside the seven-county metropolitan area. Section 8 establishes an MA increase for inpatient hospital admissions for certain psychiatric and burn services at non-state public Minnesota hospitals and that are also level 1 trauma centers. Section 9 makes Hennepin County Medical Center and Regents Hospital ineligible for quarterly hospital payments and modifies language governing these payments. Section 10 provides a temporary rate increase for private not-for-profit hospitals with high-volume maternity patients. Section 11 provides a rate increase to inpatient hospitals located in cities of the third or fourth class. Section 13 requires a collaborative psychiatric consultation and prior authorization before certain atypical antipsychotic drugs and drugs used for attention deficit disorder and attention deficit hyperactivity disorder are reimbursed under medical assistance. Section 14 guarantees that payments to all safety net hospitals will be made during federal fiscal years 2010 and 11 at no less than the 2009 level. Section 15 modifies language establishing fixed intergovernmental transfers from Hennepin and Ramsey counties to DHS to pay the state's share of rate increases for Metropolitan Health Plan and Health Partners. This is a voluntary transfer. Section 16 establishes a new disproportionate share hospital payment to HCMC and Regions. Section 17 provides a temporary 4.61% rate increase to managed care plans between May 1st, 2010 and June 30th, 2011 for medical assistance and Minnesota Care for Families with Children. Section 18 specifies that the General Assistance Medical Care Program shall be administered according to statutes 256D.031 for the period beginning March 1st, 2010, ending July 1st, 2011. And then it specifies that certain clients shall not be required to transition to Minnesota Care under the existing GAMC program. Section 19 provides that from March 1st, 2010 to June 30th, 2011, that collections and payment and recoveries from third-party health plans and accident benefits are required to be applied against the cost of GAMC and must be deposited in the new GAMC account. Section 20 provides that from March 1st, 2010 to June 30th, any collection or payment recoveries from third-party health and accident benefits that are a result of mandatory cooperation by GAMC clients in third-party collection efforts must also be deposited into this account. Section 21 establishes the General Assistance Medical Care Program for the period beginning March 1st, 2010 and ending July 1st, 2011. It establishes eligibility in the GAMC program. There is no change in eligibility with the exception that the hospital only coverage for individuals with incomes greater than 75% of the federal poverty guidelines is eliminated. And it specifies that individuals who are ineligible for the GAMC program includes individuals who have private health care coverage, are in a county correctional or detention facility, or admitted as an inpatient to a hospital on a criminal hold order, or who reside in a sex offender program and who do not cooperate with the state or county in determining a disability for supplemental security income or Social Security disability income. Subdivision 3 of Section 21 requires certain general assistance medical care applicants and recipients to transition into Minnesota Care. This is no change from the current law. Subdivision 4 specifies eligibility and enrollment procedures, and this is no change from the current law. Subdivision 5 specifies the GAMC covered service and copayments, and there is no change from the current law. Subdivision 6 establishes an option for counties to provide health care services to residents who reside within the county through a coordinated care delivery option for a fixed prospective payment. If a county elects this option, the county is responsible for providing the covered services with the exception of outpatient prescription drug coverage. Subdivision 7 states that the commissioner or a county may require a recipient to designate a primary care provider or a primary care clinic that is certified as a health care home. Subdivision 8 establishes a payment rate for services provided on or after March 1st, 2010 and before July 1st, 2010. With the exception of outpatient prescription drugs at a 50% of the GAMC rate in effect on February 28, 2010. Outpatient prescription drugs will be reimbursed at the current statutory rate. Subdivision 9, paragraph A, establishes fee-for-service rates for services provided on or after July 1, 2010 and before July 1, 2011. To GAMC residents who reside in counties that are not electing to provide services through a coordinated care delivery option. Paragraph B states that the payment rate for inpatient hospital admissions that are provided by hospitals whose GAMC revenue for these services provided in calendar year 2007 totaled more than $1 million or more. The hospital's GAMC revenue received in that calendar year was 1% or more of the hospital's net patient revenue shall be, now it will be 69% of the GMC rate in effect on February 28th, 2010. The inpatient hospital service rates for the hospitals that do not meet that criteria shall vary based on amendments that have been adopted to the bill. Paragraph C states that for all services other than inpatient hospital services and outpatient prescription drug coverage, the payment shall be 50% of the GMC rate in effect for that service on February 28, 2010. Paragraph D states that the reimbursement rate for outpatient prescription drug coverage provided on or after July 1st, 2010 and before July 1st, 2011 shall remain at the current statutory rate. Paragraph E gives the commissioner the authority to adjust rates in paragraphs B and C on a quarterly basis to ensure that the total aggregate amount paid out for services beginning March 1st, 2010 and ending June 30th, 2011 does not exceed the appropriation from the temporary general assistance medical care account. Subdivision 10 establishes a prospective fixed payment for each county electing to provide services through a county delivery care option for the rate beginning July 1st, 2010 through July 30th, 2011 does not exceed 60% of the county's total GMC payments paid for services provided in fiscal year 2009 for those residents residing in the county. Section 11 states that the appropriations for this program are not subject. Oh, I didn't realize this was in here. Well, I think we might have to talk about that subdivision just a little bit. Section 22 establishes the general assistance medical care account in the special revenue fund. And then Section 23 provides that from March 1st, 2010 to June 30th, 2011, any retroactive collection payments or recoveries from the federal government for health care benefits provided to GMC clients converted to federal supplemental security income program must be deposited in the new GMC account. Section 30 requires the commissioner to continue the drug rebate program for GMC, and the rebates received are required to be deposited in the new GMC account. Section 31 clarifies that the temporary GMC program shall be considered in the requirements of Section 256B.0644 and specifies that a provider may not continue accepting patients in one Minnesota healthcare program and refuse to accept patients enrolled in other Minnesota healthcare programs. Section 32 temporarily suspends implementation of certain sections of the current GMC program. Section 33 modifies the Minnesota Comprehensive Association assessment for health partners in calendar years 2010 and 2011 by providing a $35 million credit to their assessment allocations and transfers the amount of this credit from the General Assistance Medical Care account to the Commissioner of Commerce to pay MSHA. Section 34 transfers $7.4 million from the 2009 appropriation for health care administration to the new GMC program. And then I think we probably need an oral amendment in paragraph B. We're transferring $44 million plus any additional unspent amount from the fiscal year 2010 GMC appropriation to the GMC account established in the bill. Section 35 reduces the fiscal year 2011 appropriation for the Children and Community Services Grant and the Adult Mental Health Integrated Fund and transfers these reductions from the general fund to the new GMC account. And so I think probably we need an amendment to delete subdivision 11 of section 21.
Senator Berglund moves to delete subdivision 11 in section 21. You got a page number in the bill?
Five. In the bill.
This is the subdivision that says that page 35 in the bill.
Right. I think probably for the full finance committee, we'll work on language to make it clear that this that the medical assistance surcharge is for the purposes of only being deposited into the new GMC account. And that would accomplish our goal a lot better and not probably cause as much concern.
Any questions about that amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor, aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails.
Mr. Chairman, I'm ready for testimony. Okay. I have some people here to testify. Not everybody quite made it today, but...
Yes, I see. I got a note that Sam Grabarski, the president and CEO of the Minneapolis Downtown Council, was going to come and express his and his council's support of the bill, but he is down with the flu. But I think I do see Mary Krinke with the Minnesota Hospital Association.
Mr. Chairman, are we going to take, members going to take questions? Are we going to ask questions?
Yeah, I think I'd like to take the questions after the testimony, if you don't mind. Some of your questions might get answered during the testimony.
Welcome to the committee. State your name for the record.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Mary Krinke, and I'm with the Minnesota Hospital Association. Thank you all for making it in today and for taking time once again to hear this important issue. I know we've gotten in the last few days a lot of calls and a lot of questions regarding the run that is in your packet, and I would like to take you through that column by column if the committee would allow me that privilege. But before I do, I'd like to start with just a couple general comments on the bill, if I may. At a recent board meeting of the Minnesota Hospital Association, our board identified two key priorities to guide us through this difficult legislative session. The first one was to maintain coverage for as many Minnesotans as we can, to keep coverage for people who don't have any other options available to them because they've lost their jobs, they can't afford private coverage, and to keep coverage for as many of our citizens as we can. The second priority, given our difficult budget situation, was to maximize all possible federal revenues, leverage as much federal money as we can into Minnesota. And I know there are some problems with the Medicaid surcharge, but we have to understand that this is money that is available to Minnesota. We can capture this money up to our upper payment limit, and it is money that, quite frankly, we have not been utilizing for the past several years. So as Medicare payments have gone up and Medicaid payments have gone down, we have more upper payment limit room than we used to have. And so what that means is by putting up some type of match, we can leverage more money back to Minnesota. And I know it's easy to look at the runs and see how it affects your individual hospital, but it is important to note we look at this as our only real chance of bringing any new money into Minnesota to help solve this problem. So I realize there are some twists and turns with how this Medicaid surcharge is imposed, but please know we are very much in support of this bill and how this Medicaid surcharge works. I'd also like to note, I know it's easy to look at quote-unquote the winners on the sheet, and I think it is important to point out that right now in Minnesota, our Medicaid payment rates are based on 2002 costs minus 14.4%. So in statute, if you go back and you add up all of the previously imposed ratable reductions, it is at 14.4% applied to your Medicaid 2000, your 2002 cost reports. So it's very easy to look at this sheet of paper and say, I'm sorry, Senator Olson, for picking on you once again, but it's very easy to look at this sheet of paper and say that Bemidji is a big winner. Quite frankly, I don't think we have hardly any hospitals in the state of Minnesota that would change payer mix with the Bemidji Hospital. Okay, they have huge volumes of Medicare, huge volumes of Medicaid, huge volumes of GAMC. So when you run these formulas to put money back into the Medicaid program or back into GAMC, every way we kept running these formulas, Bemidji kept getting money. And it's quite frankly because they have all government payers. And so it's real easy to look at the sheet and say they're a winner. Well, quite frankly, I don't think really that's a fair analysis to look at it. You have to look historically at what percentage of a hospital's business has been government payer. The second point that I'd just like to make is that we also have to look at this in terms of the overall budget picture. And I don't know if a lot of people saw this in the November budget forecast, but if the governor's proposal to move this population into Minnesota Care, it would require a transfer of $111 million out of the general fund into the healthcare access fund to cover this population. And also, there is a transfer right now from the healthcare access fund to the general fund of $48 million. So you add those two things together. You add those two things together, and it's $159 million. So if we pass Senator Berglund's bill, we are reducing our $1.2 billion shortfall by $159 million. Okay? So I don't know what your all's target, your budget target, is going to be for this committee, but I can tell you, as a lobbyist for an entity that's very dependent on government money, we certainly want Senator Berglund's target to be as low as it possibly can be. And so if we can solve $159 million of what that target is by getting more federal money into Minnesota to solve this GAMC problem, it is the right thing to do. Okay. So those are just sort of some general comments before we get into the specifics. If you all want to pull out your sheets, I'd be happy to go through this with you. I know at the meeting the other day, I think people were getting the columns a little mixed up when they had questions, so I numbered them across. And I think it would be helpful if you just wrote down a number across each of the columns so that we refer to the same columns when you do have a question. So there's 10 columns of numbers, so why don't we just write down 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, all the way across with the columns, and I think that that will help as we go through them together. The first column is obviously the individual hospital's name, and the second column is obviously the city where the hospital is located. The third column is the surcharge and how it is imposed. And we have calculated the higher surcharge amount of 3.95. The bill calls for that rate to be in effect for the first 7 months of this 16-month period. And then it drops down to 3.05% for the last 3.06% for the last 9 months of this 16-month period. That is based on how much upper payment limit room we have. So that is the amount of surcharge that would be collected and sent to the Department of Human Services. So that's what every hospital would pay in increased surcharges. The second column is the amount that each hospital would receive for their overall base Medicaid rate increase. As Senator Berglund mentioned, hospitals located in Ramsey and Hennepin County would receive a 14% increase, and hospitals located outside of Ramsey and Hennepin would receive an 18% rate increase. Representative Laurie.
Senator Pretner-Solon had a question as we went here.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Krinke, just to clarify on column one. So what you're saying is, do I get this right, that there will be a 3.95% decrease in the MA payment to the hospital?
No. Mr. Chair.
Senator Pretner-Solon, the surcharge paid, there's a current surcharge by the hospital. It is going to be increased to 3.95% for the first
7 months.
7 months. And then it'll drop back to 3.06% for the balance of the time period that this increased surcharge will be in place.
I understand that. My question is, what is the surcharge on?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, the surcharge is on all revenues minus Medicare revenues, and that is how it is imposed already on our 1.56% surcharge. The second
Sharon.
Before you leave that column, okay. The numbers that are reflected here for this surcharge, is this in addition? Is this number reflecting additional dollars beyond what is already being paid by these institutions for surcharge?
Mr. Chair, Senator Sharon, that is correct. These numbers represent the increase going up from the current 1.56%. And this number is the total amount of the surcharge. It is not in addition to. So the total surcharge would be 3.95, which already includes the 1.56. The next column represents an increase in the 16 rural DRGs. As many of you all know, hospitals in rural Minnesota on 16 selected DRGs are brought up to 90% of the metro average. What this column does is it brings that average up to 100% of the metro average. And for rural hospitals that are not getting the 16 DRG, that is because they are already above the metro average. So if you're wondering why maybe some rural hospital doesn't get that add-on, it is because their rate is already above the metro average. The next two columns represent an area that the Hospital Association thought was underfunded in our Medicaid program, and that was the OB deliveries and mental health. We have talked about internally as well as at many public hearings, if we ever had an opportunity to put additional resources into our mental health programs and rates, we would like to put additional funds into mental health. The hospitals that provide mental health services have been doing so at a loss for many years. And I know it looks like when you're looking at these rates, well, why did you put money into OB and into mental health? These hospitals have been providing these services below costs for many years. And so it is an opportunity for us to adjust those rates. The next column is the one that we have a change in, and that change was reflected in Senator Berglund's A8 amendment. And this is an add-on that we're doing for hospitals located in cities of Tier 3 and Tier 4. And the other day when you saw that amendment, it went to hospitals regardless of their volume. And we did a little tinkering with this amendment, and we said we were going to pull out hospitals that had over 500 cases of MA so that we could concentrate the money into the smaller hospitals. So that is why there are a few hospitals that actually lost money in that column. And I'll give you another example of that. That column, by limiting that, we took some money away from North Memorial and Bemidji because they were higher in volume, and it enabled us to put more money into some of the smaller communities. The next column represent.
Senator Coring.
Chairman, cities tier 3 and 4, what is tier 3 and 4?
Mr. Chairman and Senators, every city in the state of Minnesota, based on its population, and this was already defined in statute, which is why we chose that categorization. Minneapolis, St. Paul, Duluth are considered, and I think Rochester, are all considered cities of the first class. Then you have cities of the second class, which is the next tiering. Cities of the fourth class are cities of less than 10,000 people. So I can, Mr. Giel or somebody can probably help me here with what the exact numbers are. But it's defined in statute. Tier 4 is the smallest. Tier 1 is the highest. So it was a way to put money into the smaller cities.
All right. Thanks. That answers the question.
Thank you.
Column 7 is the net of all of the surcharge. So what you do with column 7 is to compare each of the previous columns that add money back in and compare that to your surcharge assessment. So column 7 represents the net surcharge. We did make a change in the next column, column 8, regarding the GAMC payback. And this also was very helpful to many of our rural hospitals. Right, the original formula was a 70-40. So if you had GAMC book of business above 1% of net patient revenue, you were at 70%. And if you were at GAMC revenues of less than 1% of net patient revenues, you were at 40%. Because of the volume in that upper bucket, we were able to reduce that by just 1%. We were able to drop that 70 down to 69%, and we could bring all other hospitals up to 60%. So we were able, by taking a little from those bigger hospitals, we could raise everybody else from 40 to 60%. So now our tiering, every hospital is either getting 69% or 60%. So the next column, column 9, is the net action of both your surcharge and your GAMC payback. And then you compare that to column 10 if the GAMC payments went away entirely. And what we've done with this change in the formula that is in Senator Berglund's A8 amendment, we have 113 hospitals that do better with this formula now. 113 hospitals out of 135 do better with this change. 17 hospitals do worse, but 15 of those are still better off with this legislative solution than if GAMC went away. Okay. We have 5 hospitals that had no change. So we believe that this formula does make it flatter, the impact of the surcharge. I know that there are hospitals that still come up on the short end. It has not been calculated, but I do feel I need to mention that in Minnesota, if a hospital has less than 25 beds and it is a critical access hospital, we have been told and reassured that this is an allowable cost on Medicare cost reports. So a portion of that surcharge will be able to be offset on the Medicare cost reports for hospitals with less than 25 beds. Okay, so, Mr. Chair, that's sort of a run-through of the spreadsheet. So,
Senator Corrin.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ms. Krinke, I've got on the spreadsheet, the last column is column number 12, so I guess I'm probably numbering them different. But can you just go back?
Senator Corrin, that'd be column 10. I think we do need to stay on the same page. We numbered the numeric columns 1 through 10. We eliminated the ones with words. So you're talking about column 10.
So I'm in 10. Okay, well, the last column, number 10, then, and 9. Can you just go over that again? So number 10 was the loss. Can you go over that again?
Certainly. One of the hospitals that, if I can use this term, Mr. Chair, one of the hospitals that flipped from being I hate to use these terms, losers and winners, but one of the hospitals that flipped with our new formula was the Douglas County Hospital, and it's number 4 on your sheet, so it's kind of easy to track. So if you look at what happened when we did our change in Tier 3 and Tier 4 city classification, the Douglas County Hospital picked up some additional funding under that class Tier 3, Tier 4 add-on. So if you go across the sheet, that hospital on column 9 would still be losing $370,000, okay? It's not an insignificant amount. That's because they have GAMC and they're paying the surcharge. So they're not coming out of this a winner. They're losing $370,000. However, if GAMC went away and they received no funding for GAMC, they would lose $417,000. So you have to look at this and say, we are coming up with a solution that provides coverage for these individuals. And I have to note that this spreadsheet is a snapshot in time. We do not know what is going to happen in an individual community. You don't know if there's going to be a car accident, a farm accident, somebody loses their job. So just because you had this number of GAMC patients last year doesn't mean that that's going to be the same exact number you have next year. And so this in some ways is a protection plan for these hospitals that they're going to be able to bill something and get something back. So
can I ask another question? So under column 9, this bill and all the amendments that we just had, this is the effect that that bill will have under column 9, correct?
Senator Coring, column 9 would be the change. If we do nothing,
right,
column 10 is what occurs.
Okay.
If we pass this bill, column 9 right. is what occurs. And so the for, again, Douglas County Hospital, line 4, if we do nothing, they lose $417,000. If we pass this bill, they lose $370,000. So they are a net to the good of $47,000 by passing this bill.
So then, Mr. Chairman, the column 10 then would be the governor's proposal.
Correct. Correct. And Senator Fischbach, did I see you had a question?
Can I
as well?
Ask one other question?
Yeah.
To Ms. Krinke. It seems like you're able to move things around and change the numbers to make them better or worse or whatever have you. Why can't you move them around in such a way where everybody gets their money back?
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, that is a very good question, Senator. The problem is the federal government does not allow hold harmless provisions with a Medicaid surcharge. It is the federal government's intent that this money be put back into the Medicaid program. And so the problem is not only is the Medicaid program is not equal across the state. So as hospitals have less Medicaid volume, they receive less back in the surcharge. And if a hospital has more Medicaid volume, they get more back in the surcharge. And that's actually what the federal government intended. They wanted to help hospitals that had high volumes of Medicaid business. So we cannot put a provision in there that says this hospital is held harmless. We can tinker around with the formula to try to make it as flat as we can, which is why we did this tiering of the cities, which is why we're putting money into mental health. The federal government asks that you have policy rationales behind your reasoning. And providing access to care in rural Minnesota is a reason that they have identified across the country as a sound one for why you're doing your formula the way you're doing it. Putting money into mental health is deemed a sound one. So we believe that this will meet the federal criteria for what we're doing with the Medicaid formula.
Senator Berglund, you had some comments
right.
to make as well.
The other factor that's involved here is that even though this bill is dealing with a lot of money, it's not as much money as we would have had in the GAMC program if we hadn't had the veto. So that means we can't give everybody back as much as they were getting in GAMC before. But I do believe that this is a substantial amount of money and that it will prevent the loss of many jobs and it will continue to provide coverage for about 85,000 people over the 16-month period.
Just one
more
thing.
We're going to move on to one other senator. We can come back to you if you still have questions. Senator Fischbach?
Mr. Chair and Ms. Krinke or Senator Berglund, I'm just wondering, column 9, reflects Senate File 2168 with the delete all and all of the amendments. So this is current.
Yes.
Correct.
Okay. I just wanted to clear that up because I was it sounded like you were saying it, but I wanted to confirm. Thank you.
Good. And Senator Rosen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have two questions, if I may. Ms. Krinke, does the increase to the hospital payment on mental health and OB, is that just for fee-for-service?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, all of this bill is just dealing with the fee-for-service component of the Medicaid rate. And the reason for that is a couple different factors. This bill also relies on an HMO surcharge. The two main funding sources of how we're restoring some money to GAMC is the surcharge on hospitals and the surcharge on HMOs. And on a good day, I understand the hospital surcharge. The HMO surcharge is another component of the bill, and they have a payback mechanism as well. And so they have, while we certainly hope our hospitals can negotiate as good as they can with the plans for their PMAP rates, it is not within the confines of our MA distribution formula. So ours is just fee for service.
Senator Rosen,
thank you,
follow
Mr. Chair.
Up.
Yes, and I think I made it very clear my feelings about winners and losers. I appreciate the changes that have been made. There, obviously, there's been a lot of work here. My question to you, Ms. Krinke, though, is are all hospitals members of your association?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, every single hospital in the state of Minnesota is a member of the Minnesota Hospital Association. And I didn't want to bring this up, but I will. Our current board is comprised of 30 members, of which 15, half of our members, are from small rural communities that were present at the time this was discussed.
And Mr. Chair.
Senator Rosen.
And I guess I would like to have a full discussion about their feelings on some of these rural hospitals taking a larger portion of the cut. And I still don't have the figures, but I will be getting the figures as the percentage of cut to their operation. So we'll continue this conversation, but I do appreciate the movement in this area.
Ms. Krinke.
Mr. Chairman and members, I really feel that I need to say something about the hospital community as a whole, if I can. Last year, when the governor's budget proposal came out and proposed to eliminate MinnesotaCare coverage for all single adults without children, MinnesotaCare is a program that is primarily a program for rural Minnesotans. We have a lot more rural Minnesotans on MinnesotaCare than we do metro people. And our Metro members rallied around the MinnesotaCare program to preserve coverage for rural Minnesotans. And right now, our rural members are rallying around keeping coverage for the GAMC population. So when you have it as a goal to preserve coverage for as many Minnesotans as you can, some years that means you're sticking up for the GAMC population, and other times you're sticking up for the MinnesotaCare enrollees. And so I hope people realize that as we put money back into GAMC, it is going to give a larger share proportionately of that money to hospitals that care for more GAMC patients. But last year, the whole issue was around preserving care in MinnesotaCare. So,
Senator Berglund.
And Mr. Chairman, I think it's also important for us to remember that the hospitals in Minnesota are a system. So when you have a small rural hospital, they don't do everything that people in that community might need. So when somebody shows up that maybe has mental illness, they get sent to a larger hospital in the state or in the community. And so because we have a lot of people in the GAMC program that are affected by mental illness, you tend to have those hospitals that provide mental illness services affected more. But you need to remember that if you don't have hospitals that are providing that service, even though they're not a small hospital, you don't have the continuum of services that the people in your community need.
Senator Rosen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And just one more comment that we're basing these disparity on metro and rural, and I think the argument from what I hear is that you could have one big case eventually. Well, if that's the issue, then we should be looking at our short-term offenders and we could always be wondering what's going to happen down the road. I still think the shift to some of these rural hospitals is way out of their ability to cope with. And I'm looking into those figures, and I'll have more, but I do wonder how many are going to be able to stomach this and move forward, and what is going to happen to the communities and to the fabric of Greater Minnesota. We need to keep it strong on this.
Ms. Krinke?
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, I'm not trying to make light of this because I recognize there are some hospitals that don't come out positive on this surcharge. So I don't want to make light of this. But I would ask you to go back and look at the governor's budget proposal from last year. and look at the budget cuts that have been made in the past, these numbers are relatively small compared to some of the previous cuts that have been imposed. So I never like to argue when somebody wants to stick up for hospitals taking cuts, because that's what we want you to say. I hope that you have that same passion in a couple weeks from now when you're doing the overall budget. So.
Got a couple more questions from members. Senator Bruckner Solon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You know, the question arises again about the pass-through to the health plans for the PMAP programs. And this has been an issue for a long, long time. And I'm sure your assumptions here, based on what the hospitals will be contributing, is based on them receiving those pass-throughs.
Mm-mm. This isn't. This is all fee-for-service.
All fee-for-service. But, okay, so there's no additional funds going to?
The only funds going to the HMOs are in relationship to the HMO surcharge. It has no effect on the hospitals. Everything on this sheet relating to hospitals is fee-for-service.
Okay, well then I'll save my question to another day then.
Looks like we have two members that still have questions, Senator Lynch and then Senator Coring, three maybe, and we do still have several other people who would like to testify. So, Senator Lynch.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Krinke, in column two, can you just review quickly the breakdown between the 14% and the 18%?
Ms. Krinke.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, this is sort of in addition to all the sort of specialty add-ons, if I can say that, the mental health, the OB, which city. Every hospital in the state will either get a 14% Medicaid increase. If the hospital is located in Hennepin or Ramsey County, they will get a 14% increase in all of their fee-for-service Medicaid payments. If they are located outside of Ramsey and Hennepin, they will get an 18% increase. So right off the bat, we are funneling as much money as we can outside of the Twin City area.
Senator Lynch.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Krinke, the Hospital Association has done really good work on trying to move forward with a solution. Ms. Krinke, can you comment on column 10? And my question there is, could I make a connection between what appears in column 10 and what hospitals might see in terms of uncompensated care should this legislation not move forward?
Mr. Chair, Senator Lynch, this column represents what hospitals were actually paid what was projected last time around. So in other words, if you go to the back page, it's $210 million that hospitals were actually paid for GAMC services. We believe that if this bill does not pass, hospitals will see a big influx and actually an increase in their uncompensated care beyond that $210 million, because people will not have coverage for any primary care services. So if physicians, if you can't go to the clinic and get it paid, if you don't have access to your prescription drugs, I mean, one of the things that we have not really talked about in this bill that is such a high priority is to keep people on their prescription drugs and their mental health drugs. And if these individuals do not get access to their mental health prescriptions, the emergency rooms around our state will be inundated. So we actually think that we have sort of underplayed all of these numbers, but we can't estimate that because that's based on what could happen looking into the crystal ball. What we've done is looked at what actual payments were, but we believe uncompensated care would greatly increase if this bill did not pass.
Senator Olson. Senator Erickson Robes, you were tentatively.
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Ms. Krinke and Senator Berglund, everyone for doing the work. I'll speak like Senator Rosen did for one of the hospitals on the pages here who are going the wrong direction as far as our community is concerned. Understanding the big picture, I think, has been very helpful, and thank you both of you very much for explaining that. We understand that under the governor's plan, the Healthcare Access Fund will be bankrupted, and there'll be more uninsured people. And I think, Senator Berglund, you said one time, the governor's given us an empty glass, and we're at least trying to put something in it to go back. However, having said that, I still will continue to talk about some of the rural hospitals who are putting more money into the solution and really stressed as is. Just a quick count through here, and these are rough numbers. I may have miscounted. But it looks like there's 93 hospitals on this last run that you gave us that will lose more money under this plan than Governor Pawlenty's on allotment. If you just compare 9 and 10. So some of those numbers are small numbers, some are big numbers, but there's still a lot of hospitals that are going to be in worse condition than under just a straight run allotment. Now, that's the short-term impact. The long-term impact, of course, is that if GAMC goes away, they're going to be in worse trouble anyway. But all of this does not fit on the end of a bumper sticker. And it's pretty hard to explain to the hospitals back home, people back home that are worried about our hospitals. So can you just speak to the large number of hospitals that are contributing to this flattened out solution that are still going to be, I mean, we got to explain this to our communities.
Right. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, the GAMC program would have spent $400 million. And what Senator Berglund has, yes, that's right, $400 million for a 12-month period. And what Senator Berglund has done is taken that program and cut it nearly in half for a 16-month period. And so you can't make everyone a financial winner when you're squeezing a program down nearly in half. And so I think we have to look at this as getting the best of a bad situation. So I will say, in terms of explaining it, it does not have any new taxes. It does not have any cost shifting to the private business community. It is a solution that comes from within the healthcare community, and we're maintaining coverage for 85,000 people. So in terms of sound bites, you've provided coverage for 85,000 people within the healthcare community coming up with a solution.
So, Senator Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you. And I realize, coming from representing one of the districts where the numbers look favorable, that this is probably sounds self-serving. But, you know, to the extent that we're all here trying to represent our districts and trying to help each other understand the concerns that we all have for the people we represent, and then I think we're, you know, to an extent justified in asking questions about how these numbers and how this plan affect the areas where we live, and that's part of what we're supposed to be doing, as well as looking at the bigger picture. But with that in mind, I just would like to throw in to the mix for consideration and for other people here to think about that, you know, we can look at the numbers that we have here, and we can look at the numbers that Senator Rosen is getting that we'll talk about, you know, these numbers as a percentage of some of the overall budget that an individual hospital may have. But the other number that isn't on the page that should be considered is the number that has to do with the percentage of that hospital's budget where the care they're receiving is undercompensated. Because if you look at that, as I think that kind of in a nutshell, that's what you were saying as you went through and looked at these numbers, there are some hospitals, not that there are any of them are in the best shape right now, but there are some struggling much more than others simply because they have such a high percentage of undercompensated care. When they have a lot of GAMC, when they have Minnesota or Medicaid and Medicare patients, they have a very small percentage of that population that's actually paying full freight. And when they do have that insured population paying full freight, those people whose incomes are a lot lower in that, because there are a lot of poor people there, their incomes are lower, actually having to pay a lot more for their private health insurance. And so there's just no way to go with the cost shifting to try to make the financial mix work for those hospitals and keep their doors open. And the larger community they serve, where they have tend to be more regional hospitals, the more they're drawing in those really sick people who are covered through these undercompensating kinds of health care coverages. And so as a result of that, their hospitals like the hospital in Bemidji have been losing over $1 million a year for a while and having to backfill their budget with reserves that they had set aside when times were better. So it's not as though they're coming out a winner. They're perhaps less of a loser than the current pay mix that they had and where they would have been. And I think that Ms. Krinke alluded to that, but I just want to make sure that that's understood, that, you know, that there are other numbers we could be looking at as well as just the ones we have on the page.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, for this opportunity.
So. Thank you. We'll move on with public testimony, and we'll have another chance to ask questions. Patrick Ness with Catholic Charities. Welcome to the committee. State your name for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. My name is Patrick Ness, Public Policy Manager with Catholic Charities of St. Paul and Minneapolis. Also here as a member of the Save GMC Coalition. We are a broad-based coalition of over 40 organizations from across the state, including consumer and low-income advocates, labor and faith groups, providers, social service organizations, and others who are deeply concerned about the pending elimination of funding for GMC. Our number one goal as a coalition is to protect the benefits and eligibility of the over 70,000 people, low-income Minnesotans, who use the program every year, that to ensure that they continue to have access to comprehensive, affordable health care. While the solution on the table is imperfect and only temporary, our coalition would like to express our strongest support for Senator Berglund's bill for a redesigned general assistance medical care program. We commend the author for the commitment to preserving access to GAMC, and it will truly make a tremendous difference in the lives and for the health of all the people who depend on it for their very survival. We also think that it's very important that this proposal preserves affordable co-payments for enrollees in the program. As you know, GAMC enrollees earn, many of them only earn $203 a month. It's about $2,500 a year. Just imagine that, $203 a month. Proportionally, for someone making $35,000, the minimum increase that a switch to MinnesotaCare would mean about an extra $600, and that's without adding hospital co-pays or the $10,000 limit. It's a significant burden on people who are struggling to make it on $203 a month. These increases in co-pays may seem minimal and doable even to other low-income Minnesotans, but it's critical to ensure continued access to care and reducing overall costs of the healthcare system, social service agencies, public safety, and other taxpayer-funded services. Now, we understand all too well the connection between housing and healthcare. If people are not on their medications, they will eventually lose their housing, and we will see more people sleeping outside. That is a guarantee. Now, for 35 years, under both Republican and Democratic leadership, through past economic recessions and deep budget deficits, we have continued to invest in the basic health care of Minnesotans' poorest and sickest citizens. We've committed to this because long ago, we decided that it was both fiscally wise and the right thing to do. To the senators on this committee, we ask for your leadership. You are the last line of defense for the 70,000 people who have so very, very little. Please help protect the basic dignity and care that is afforded to them by general assistance medical care. Thank you for the opportunity to speak today, and thank you to Senator Berglund and the rest of the members of this committee for your leadership on this issue. Mr. Chair, at this time, I'd like to bring up Freddie Torain, GMC enrollee.
Freddie, welcome to the committee. State your name for the record.
My name is Freddie Turin. Thank you, Senator Berglund. Members of the committee allowed me to speak today. My name is Frederick Turin. I receive coverage through GA assisted medical care. I currently suffer from glaucoma, rheumatoid arthritis, and high blood pressure. I take medicine for my eyes twice a day, and if I do not have it, my doctor informed me that my eyesight would worsen. Eventually, I will go blind. I first applied for Social Security disability back in 2004, and my arthritis has been so disabled that my legs would lock up and make me unable to move about or work, as often the case. I was denied Social Security benefit in reply 2009 and hoped to have a positive outcome with the assistance of the state funding program to help people on general assistance through the process of attaining Social Security. I was living on general assistance for $203 a month, plus odd jobs and sharing an apartment for $475 a month. Until last month, when the landlord went into foreclosure. I'm currently living in a shelter trying to find affordable housing. I'm trying to do odd jobs, but my arthritis and eyesight limit what I can do. I have volunteered at Central Lutheran Church and St. Stephen Human Service for many years, and GAMC is a critical bridge for me to not become blind or more disabled until I attain federal health care. I hope you find a way to help, because we cannot afford to pay more than we do, and this can be difficult for us. Thank you for listening to me.
Mr. Turan, thank you for coming to tell your story.
Mr. Chair, with your permission, I'd like to bring up Mr. Gary Gunkel.
Mr. Gunkel, welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record.
My name is Gary Gunkel, and good morning, Mr. Chair and committee members. My name is Gary Gunkel, and I appreciate you for listening to why I am asked you for your support of this legislation, preserving health coverage for people like me. I was born in a small town of Wydena, Minnesota, and eventually moved from the farm to South St. Paul. After high school, I had a low draft number for Vietnam, so I asked if I enlisted if I could spend the summer working at my grandparents' farm. I then went to Fort Sam Houston, where I became a rifle expert and a medic. I was in an ambulance company of the 7th Brigade, which was a medical unit, where we learned a lot of things. One simple thing that I was taught, that an ink pen is a mighty powerful weapon. Can be your worst best friend or your enemy's worst nightmare. We could use it as a weapon or splice an artery or perform a tracheotomy. I was told that a medic was a prize catch because the Vietnamese could use you to work on their guys at the expense of our soldiers. And if you ever saw the movie MASH, those were the type of ambulances that we drove back then. In later years, I did some farming, worked at the VA hospital for 7 years, and I managed in restaurants for 15. In August of 2008, I was living in Inver Grove Heights, heading for work at Mystic Lake, where I had worked security for 9 years. A deer entered the road on 35E, resulting in an accident of my SUV, caused back injury and headaches. I lost my job 2008, a fall. I began using GAMC in October 2008 to address my injuries. This was a godsend as I was waiting for veterans' benefits to kick in. I was sharing an apartment at this time and rent with my son. Till last year, my son was laid off as a cook and entered the military full time. When he left, I couldn't afford the rent, and I lost my housing. I lived with friends for a few months, and I lived at Harbor Lights, but I have not had stable housing for almost a year. I am hoping to get housing through the VA, but that hasn't happened yet. For some vets, GAMC is a bridge until federal assistance can go into effect, but that can take for a long time. I'm representing other vets who need this bill passed to allow accessed when it is needed most. I made not just one sacrifice product vulnerable. By serving our country, I've made two. See, this week, my son has left for Afghanistan in the 101st Air Division. Thank you for sacrifices that has been made to protect our vulnerable. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Gunkel, thank you for coming to tell your story. Mm-hmm. Senator Berglund.
Mr. Chairman, I really want to thank the folks that either are or have been on the GMC program at some time that have come to the Capitol, either to testify or to talk to legislators individually. I know that the circumstances of their lives make it very difficult for them on a day-to-day basis, much less managing to squeeze in trips to the Capitol. So it's not easy for people to get up in front of a committee and talk about the hard times that they're having. And so I want to thank everybody who's done that. I also want to just remind us that we really are talking about helping people to have their lives. I talked last Thursday to somebody who was on GMC receiving 16 medications a day. If those 16 medications are discontinued for some reason, I don't believe that person will be able to make it. And so I wish this bill could be a better bill in many ways. I wish there was more money in the bill to help our hospitals and the clients they serve. But I do believe that this is the best we can do, or I wouldn't be here in front of you today with this bill. And I do think it's an important bill for us to pass. So with that, I will move that Senate File 2168 as amended be recommended to pass.
We have a couple more questions from members, and I understand Mr. Giel has an oral amendment that we need to address as well. Maybe we'll take the amendment real quick.
Mr. Chairman, it's an amendment to the A6 amendment that was already adopted. Page 4, line 23, delete the. Page 4, line 24, delete integrated fund and insert grants.
I would withdraw my former motion and I make this motion.
Senator Berglund moves the oral amendment offered by Mr. Giel. Everyone understand the amendment? Questions? Seeing none, all those in favor of that amendment signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Motion prevails. And then we have a couple of questions. Senator Rosen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And two questions. Senator Berglund, the A3 amendment is reflected on the fiscal note that's been handed out to us. Is that correct?
Yes.
Senator
okay.
Berglund.
And the other question, thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Berglund, is if we are using federal dollars to service a population, which you know definitely needs to be served, has this been clarified by CMS? Are they going to buy off on this? Have we vetted that out thoroughly?
Senator Berglund.
Mr. Chairman and Senator Rosen, we believe so. We know there are other states that receive this funding. They have set rules that we can't go higher than 5.5%. We're not anywhere near that because our upper payment limit doesn't allow us to get close to that amount. The Hospital Association has hired a consultant that has helped them in regard to the formula that they've worked on to make sure that it would meet the guidelines. And so I believe that it does meet the federal government's tests, and many other states have used this mechanism to help with relief for their budget. You can see how very difficult that would be. I know at one point when I started explaining this to you, you asked me why I hadn't done this before. This is not an easy thing to do. And I believe for this purpose, at this time, it's the only way we can solve this problem. But I don't consider this to be a perfect solution. But I do believe that it is a solution that will move us forward for the next 16 months, give us some breathing room so that we can consider what, if anything, the federal government's going to do with health care reform that could also address the needs of this population. And I think that we need that time. And I know the people that are affected by the bill need the time.
Senator Rosen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Brooklyn, and I do appreciate the work you've done on this. But my question is, there is not a CMS director at this time, and if we go ahead and pass this and it is refused, how is this going to work? Who's going to be responsible for this?
Senator Berglund.
Well, Mr. Chairman and Senator Rosen, if for some reason we're not collecting Medicaid surcharge into this account, then the commissioner has the authority not to make payments.
Make it cost neutral so that it can't exceed this amount.
I mean, we already have language in here that says that if the payments aren't sufficient, the commissioner has authority to reduce the payments. Obviously, if there isn't any money in the account, then there would be no payments being made.
And Mr. Chair, there will not be a redirection of the responsibility for those payments then?
In this bill, this is a standalone bill.
Senator Lynch and then Senator Pretner Solon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Berglund, we've spent a lot of time talking about what this bill does and what it doesn't do, and it has, I think it's important to, as we maybe can try to step outside of this bill or look at it from a more global perspective, and a couple of things that this bill accomplishes that we haven't talked about today is that it protects and maintains the integrity of the Healthcare Access Fund. And it goes a long way in helping to keep that fund solvent. And I think that's a really important, and it has been recognized by this division in the past. I also think that this legislation moves in the direction that this division has been trying to seek in terms of how can we increase access in Minnesota? And if this legislation does not go forward, we are certainly moving in a direction that will decrease that access to some 70,000 Minnesotans. Another thing that we haven't talked about today is the work that's provided by so many healthcare providers, particularly those at Hennepin County Medical Center and Regions in Fairview, and those entities that serve the greatest number of this population and the jobs that potentially are saved at those institutions. And finally, I'd like to just acknowledge certainly the Hospital Association and the work that they have done, but also to the counties. It's been a challenging time for the counties as well. We've not heard quite as much from them here in our discussion today, but I'd like to acknowledge the counties for coming with us to be a part of the solution.
Thank you, Senator Lynch. Senator Pretner Solon, you had a...
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to make comments, too, and Senator Lynch addressed some of them, but I'd like to speak in support of the bill. I think it's a very tough solution to swallow, but I'm convinced it is the best solution that can be that we can arrive at. And I'd also like to thank the hospital community and Senator Berglund for all your efforts on this bill. I think that it is very important that we not abandon those people who would not receive health care if we did not have a solution. And for that, I think that this is very important. I also appreciate the fact that it does preserve the Health Care Access Fund. And it also provides a solution for about $160 million of the cuts that we are likely to have to make in health care in the upcoming session. So I think it's the best solution we can come up with.
Senator Berglund.
Mr. Chairman, I guess I have one last kind of small amendment, and I'll do this orally. This will help us to straighten out the final fiscal note that will be prepared to the bill with the other amendments that have been added today. This would be page 3, line 3, change 44 to 53. page 3, line 7, change 44 to 53. This is the appropriation section.
This is of the, okay, so this is of the A3 amendment? Or on the A6 amendment?
Right.
Say it one more time.
Page 3, line 3, change the number 44 to 53. Page 3, line 7, change the number 44 to 53.
Okay. Any questions or comments on that oral amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor of Senator Berglund's oral amendment signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Motion prevails. We've got a
then
few
Mr.
more
Chairman,
questions.
Then, Mr. Chairman, I'll renew the motion on the bill. Okay.
Senator Berglund renews her motion that Senate File 2168, as amended, be recommended to pass. On that motion, Senator Fischbach.
Okay, so I understand that the fiscal note that we have does not reflect even the A3. It's from the original.
No, it does reflect the A3, but there have been amendments to the A3 amendment that have been made today.
Okay, because, Mr. Chair, Senator Berglund, the fiscal note that I've got, it doesn't say A3. Usually they kind of indicate that they would be to the delete all.
Well, they did it to all the amendments that were laid on the table previously, and I have put them in a delete everything amendment.
Okay. And Mr. Chair, Senator Berglund, do we know when we would get that updated fiscal note, and are we going to slow the process in order to get that?
I was told that it would be available tomorrow. These changes are not large changes. They don't affect the basic funding of the surcharge itself.
And Mr. Chair, Senator Berger, because we don't have the even this fiscal note here that we have that is written to the A3, we don't have the full fiscal note. I mean, it looks as though it's available, but we do not have the full fiscal note.
Senator Berger.
It is quite a lengthy fiscal note, and so our fiscal analyst has it if you want it, but we thought we'd not duplicate it for everybody in the committee today. If you want to hold it up, Dennis, so she can see.
Mr. Chair, it indicates here that it's 27 pages.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, and I would like a copy of that if we could. But I guess I'm just... I would hope that we're not rushing through this without looking at the full fiscal note and implications because, it seems like we're trying to get this through fairly quickly, and my understanding is that the other body is going to be another week or so at least. And so I'm wondering when will this be in finance? Thank you. Finance Committee.
Mr. Chairman and Senator, it is scheduled for tomorrow. And we have really the department needs to know if this program is going to be changed and how it is going to be changed by February 28th because they would be scheduled otherwise to do systems work to begin the process of auto enrollment and so. We don't have a lot of time, and this was the time that Senator Cohen gave me for his committee. So we will have the completed fiscal note by that time tomorrow.
Thank you.
Thank you. Senator Sharon.
Thank you. Senator Berglund, we were talking about this as a temporary solution that it ends in 2011, I assume, and that time frame is going to be used to take a look at what may need to be a better longer-term solution, and that this simply stops being an operating solution for this problem in 2011 until we authorize another program. Is that correct? Do I understand that correct?
Mr. Chairman, no, not quite. It is a temporary program, and the program we have today is still in law. Mm-hmm. It is a statutory program. The governor vetoed 1 year of the appropriation, but you don't veto a statutory law. You can ask the legislature to repeal it. I don't think we would, but so we will have this issue back before us to decide whether to do something different in the future. But otherwise, the program as it had been would be reinstated, as far as I understand the law.
Senator Sharon.
Thank you for that reminder. I'd forgotten that. One of the things we haven't talked about today, and I haven't really understood the impact of the MA rate increases to HMOs, or the surcharge on HMOs, and then the follow-up increase, MA rate increases to the HMOs. I haven't seen that under this current bill. And I'm wondering about that, what the thinking is behind the MA rate increases to HMOs to offset their surcharges. What does that do? Why are we doing that rate increase? What is it used for? And is there something we can do with lowering their MA rate increase to further assist some small hospitals whose percent of their budget is significantly impacted by this proposal?
Well, Mr. Chairman, I think a word of thanks needs to go out to some of those HMOs as well, because the Medicaid surcharge operates in the same way. There are winners and losers, and the losers, most of the losers have been hanging in there with us very, very well, and I appreciate that. But no, I don't think that is a way to find additional money in this bill. The surcharge is on all their revenues, and we are paying them back, if you want to call it that, with an MA increase. It's not equal to the amount even of half of the surcharge, so I don't think this is a place to be looking for switching money around.
We've got a couple more questions. Senator Olson, I believe, was next.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Senator Berglund, and just wanted to make a final comment of something that I don't think has been raised, but to me is just an additional point in support of this bill. We've talked a lot and heard firsthand from people, so I think everyone here understands the humanitarian reasons for passing this bill, because of the devastation that would occur to people who are very poor, not getting the medical attention they need. And we've also talked about how costs will be diverted to other areas of the budget if we don't pass this bill. But the one other cost from an economic standpoint that occurs to me just based on firsthand personal experiences with people who benefited from GAMC and has been emphasized a little bit here today is how much of a bridge this money is for people to be able to find a way back to, for many people at least, find a way back to becoming healthier tax-paying citizens. And without that bridge being in place, the emphasis we're putting on jobs and allowing people, enabling people to be able to work, because we know how that affects our bottom line, is really going to take a hit. And I don't even know if we've thought about that or the impact of that. But over time, the loss of those revenues from people who would otherwise be working will also have an effect on our overall budget.
Senator Sharon had one more point.
Well, I'm still struggling. As you all know, I've been kind of harping on this rebasing issue that's delayed in this bill again. And, you know, I heard Ms. Krinke talking about the partnership of those who benefit from certain programs supporting Minnesota Care, where the elder population is greater in the rural area, and now those hospitals have come to the table in order to deal with the needs of hospitals that really carry a large book of general assistance medical care, and I applaud that. I know, however, that the issue of rebasing is as critical to our rural hospitals as general assistance medical care cuts are to those that carry that large book of business. And in some ways, if you think about it, this solution could have been put in place to solve the rebasing issue instead of general assistance medical care. But it hasn't been. And I am simply saying that in this time frame that we have now, that I hope the hospital association, the members of the hospital association that have asked the hospitals to come to the table and help them at some cost to these rural hospitals, that we see the same kind of willingness to reorganize. If we don't have new revenue, how can we reorganize the existing revenue to be fairer in how we are making payments to all of the hospitals throughout the state? And I just want to emphasize something that I heard Senator Olson say in relationship to these things not costing business, not being a cost to business. There is a cost to our rural small businesses because they have to pay more for their health, private pay health insurance programs, because of the amount of cost shifting that occurs from uncompensated care. And so there is a cost to us at many levels to not address the issue of rebasing.
Senator Berglund.
Mr. Chairman and Senator Sharon, I certainly agree that hospital rebasing is an important issue. I don't want people to be confused, however, by thinking that somehow it disproportionately affects rural hospitals. It does not. It affects all hospitals, and it affects disproportionately some urban hospitals a lot. So, again, that's just not want to leave anybody in anybody's mind that this rebasing is a rural-urban hospital issue. It's not. It's an all-hospital issue.
Senator Olson and then Senator Erickson-Ropes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just would also like to quickly follow Senator Sharon's point, because I strongly agree with her to the degree that I sat down with a business manager for the hospital recently, and we talked about how payments are made to rural hospitals, and some of this is federal, so I know that it isn't even something we can deal with at the state level, but the idea of making payments based on some idea of cost of living being less in rural communities, when the reality is that most of the costs relate to salaries, and hospitals are having to pay more to doctors to get them to come out to rural areas, just because there are more conveniences available in metro areas, it just doesn't seem to make any sense anymore. And I just wonder whether it isn't possible to somehow, I know it's always easier to fix things, but when you have extra money to add on, so there aren't winners and losers, but rather than going through a very expensive and complicated rebasing process, wouldn't it be easier to just kind of level some of those numbers so that we could treat hospitals and payment structures more fairly? I mean, that's the question I would ask us to think about.
Senator Erickson-Ropes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just one very short question. On this document of the runs, it still says draft version. So is the Hospital Association and are you, Senator Berglund, going to continue to work on massaging numbers as they move along? Because I very much want to support this bill by the time it reaches the floor. And I don't know today that I'll be able to do that. So is this the final version, or are you going to keep working on numbers?
Senator Berglund.
I think that would be a question for the Hospital Association to answer.
Is there somebody from the Hospital Association that
maybe
cares to comment
answer better
on
than
this?
I.
Welcome back to the committee, Ms. Krinke.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, we sent this out to our members late in the day on Friday, and obviously this committee meeting was early in the day on Monday, so I have not heard from headquarters is the way I would like to answer that question. But I do think it's important to note that every time you change the formula, we are dealing with a set bucket of money. And so every time we change the formula, it causes a wrinkle someplace else. And so we actually think the formula that is in this bill now is pretty reflective of the Medicaid program and its costs. So I don't want to go on record as saying that this is over, this is done, this is perfection, because there are obviously still some problems, but I don't think we're going to have major revisions in it. So I think we're pretty close is the way I would like to answer that. It doesn't mean that it's final, but I would say it is pretty darn close.
And so. It is what we are going to vote on, I guess, today when Senator Berglund renews her motion that Senate file 2168, as amended, be recommended to pass. On that motion, any further comments? Seeing none, all those in favor of that motion signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Motion prevails.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee.
Thank you, Senator Berglund. There being no more business before the committee, it stands adjourned.